Welcome to everyone who is joining the telebriefing today. We are expecting a few hundred people on the call today, so all the lines are in listen-only mode. A question and answer session will follow the remarks by the presenters. I'm Leah Carolyn, Executive Director and President of the Congressional Prayer Caucus Foundation. If you have any questions for the question and answer session, please email those to admin@cpcfoundation.com, or you can text it to Jessica at 757-869-8995. I will be repeating those instructions a few times throughout the call. After the remarks by the congressman, we will provide a time for the question and answer. As we are waiting for everyone to join the call, I want to make you aware of a few things that your government leaders are spearheading. Just thought I would give you a couple of updates for those that are joining us on the call as we wait for everybody to come on. I want to express a warm welcome to members of one of our newest legislative prayer caucuses. South Carolina is launching the South Carolina Legislative Prayer Caucus. They have over 50 members. I think it might be up to 60 members now that are actually at the beginning forming the caucus. We will be holding an official launch on January 20th at the Capitol at 11 a.m. So if you're in South Carolina in the Capitol there, please join us on that day. The American Prayer Caucus Network now has over 500 state legislators in over 20 states who have joined the nearly 100 members of the Congress in the Congressional Prayer Caucus. So we're expecting a few hundred people. We have about 350 people on the call today, so all lines are muted. A question and answer session will follow the remarks by the presenters. If you have a question, please email it to admin@cpcfoundation.com. Or text it to Jessica at 757-869-8995. After the remarks by the congressman, we will provide a time for Q&A. Also want to make you aware of the In God We Trust Put It Up initiative. This initiative was launched after House Resolution 13 passed 396-9 in the Congress, reaffirming In God We Trust as our national motto. And they also included in that resolution the encouragement of the display of it in our schools and government buildings. That was for the purpose of being able to take advantage of the opportunity to put God back up in our schools and government buildings to reverse the momentum that has been happening with taking God off of all of our buildings and monuments and schools. We have this opportunity to put God back up. One of the elements of this initiative is the Million Window Campaign. We've now distributed nearly a 500,000 window cleans for people who are putting them on these removable window cleans on their cars, offices, or home windows, making a statement that In God We Trust is our national motto. So you can get an In God We Trust window clean at www.ingodwetrust.com. Or many of our affiliate partners, many of the organizations who are actually getting on this call have also made them available on their own website, which we are happy to do. We love partnering with the ministries out there and the organizations. Many of the state legislative prayer caucuses are promoting the Million Window Campaign. Just go to one of their websites and purchase a window clean. Tell others to do the same, and let's get our national motto and God We Trust on a million windows. So we are expecting about 350 people on the call today, so all lines are in listen-only mode. A question and answer session will follow the remarks by the presenters. So if you have a question, please email it to admin@cpcfoundation.com. That's admin@cpcfoundation.com, or you can text it to Jessica at 757-869-8995. And after the remarks by the congressman, we will provide a time for Q&A. We'd love to be able to have some interaction with the questions that you might have. If you live in Pennsylvania, I just wanted to let you know that on November 17th, several government leaders have invited pastors, ministry leaders, citizens committed to praying for our country to a Pray USA event at the historic United Methodist Church in Harrisburg, right across from the Capitol. That event will be at 6 p.m. It's part of the extraordinary Pray USA Government Leaders Calling the Nation of Prayer movement that is sweeping across the nation. This is the most recent event. Legislators have held these events in Michigan, Virginia, Colorado, other places where they're encouraging the church to join them in unceasing prayer for this nation. These government leaders are standing up in pulpits with pastors side by side to call the church to prayer, unceasing prayer for America. And the date, again, for that event is November the 17th at 6 p.m. in Harrisburg at the historic United Methodist Church. You can find all the information at our website, cpcfoundation.com, on the events page. If you'd like to come to that, we would sure love to have you there. If you want to know more about the Pray USA movement, you can also find out more at PrayUSA.com. Churches across America are scheduling Pray USA Sundays with a short Pray USA spotlight or a full Pray USA special service. Go to PrayUSA.com and everything you need is there to promote it, or download a church kit if your church wants to schedule a Pray USA Sunday with a government leader. We will be opening the call in just a moment. We're confirming that all of our presenters are on the call. We are expecting about 350 on the call today, so all the lines are muted. A question and answer session will follow the remarks by the presenters. So if you have any questions, please email them to admin@cpcfoundation.com or text it to Jessica at 757-869-8995. And you can do that anytime throughout the call. You can do it now. You can do it anytime in the next 30, 40 minutes, and we will receive those questions so that we can open that up for the presenters after they give their remarks. And this past weekend, just want to also let you know, members of the Ohio Legislative Prayer Caucus joined Pastor Tim Throckmorton at Crossroads Church for a Pray USA Sunday spotlight. It's a very inspiring time. I had the privilege of being there with them, calling their church to unceasing prayer. The weekend before that, Congressman Forrest joined Pastor Will Langford at Great Bridge Baptist Church for Pray USA special service. This was a full service, as well as Congressman Forbes spoke for 20 minutes. And the 20-minute sermon is available on our www.prayusa.com website in the story section if you'd like to see a Pray USA special service or would like to hear the remarks or see the remarks that Congressman Forbes gave related to that. If you want to know more about the Pray USA movement, just go to PrayUSA.com. Churches across America are scheduling Pray USA special services and spotlights and everything you need is there to promote it, or download a church kit if your church wants to schedule a Pray USA Sunday. And you can also view an inspiring 3-minute video with government leaders or a 1-minute video from Norma Downey talking about the Pray USA movement and her support and how it's lining up with what's needed here in America. We will open the call in just a moment. We are confirming that our presenters are on the call. If they haven't seen it yet, the members of the Congressional Prayer Caucus have recently launched the Take It Forward Facebook page. If you have a story to share of an individual or faith-based organization that's making a difference in your community, please go to the Facebook page and submit the story so they can feature it. Very exciting program that the opportunity that our members of Congress has launched. Just wanted to again let you know that we're expecting a few hundred on the call today. Sounds like we have a little bit of noise on the call. That actually might be one of our presenters that has jumped on the call, and your phones are not muted. If you are a presenter and you're jumping on the call, you might want to mute your phone physically because we do not have you muted. You're actually not muted. I should have probably told you that. Thank you. It sounds like the presenter muted the phone. So just to let you know, we're expecting, again, a few hundred, maybe about 350 on the call, and these will be pastors and ministry leaders, citizens. All the lines are muted. The presenters, though, are coming in unmuted. So if you are coming in as a presenter, please feel free to mute the call. A question and answer session will follow the remarks by the presenters. So if you have a question, please email it to help@admin@cpcfoundation.com. That's admin@cpcfoundation.com. Or you can text it straight to Jessica at 757-869-8995. And after the remarks by the congressman, we will provide a time for Q&A. So we are thrilled. We'll be starting the call in just a moment. I just wanted to, again, invite you, if you live in Pennsylvania, next Tuesday, November the 17th, several government leaders have invited pastors, ministry leaders, citizens who are committed to praying for our country to a Pray USA event. and we'd love to have you there at the Historic United Methodist Church in Harrisburg. And again, all of our prayer caucuses are bipartisan. We have both sides of the aisle committed to protecting religious freedom, preserving our Judeo-Christian heritage, and we'd love to have you there with us. So it looks like we were right at the top of the hour now, 1 o'clock. I'm going to go ahead and open the call now. I want to welcome everyone to today's Congressional Prayer Conference Foundation telebriefing. I'm Leah Carolyn, the President and Executive Director of the Congressional Prayer Caucus Foundation. Thank you, every one of you, who has taken your time to be on this call. Many of you are working tirelessly on behalf of our nation, and we appreciate everything that you are doing. During the presentation, all lines will be in listen-only mode, and this call will be recorded. A question and answer session will follow the remarks by the presenters, so if you have a question, please email it to admin@ctcfoundation.com or text it to Jessica at 757-869-8995. And after the remarks by the Congressman, we will provide a time for the question and answer. We have over 350 legislators, ministry leaders, pastors, and like-minded citizens on the call today, so all lines are muted. Many of you know the Congressional Prayer Caucus Foundation unites and supports national and local government leaders who are working with citizens like you, waging an uncompromising battle for America through prayer and action. And we're going on the offense to protect our God-given religious freedom and advocate for biblical principles of morality, repelling the forces that want to uproot God from our culture. Today we have on this call four members of the Congressional Prayer Caucus, which is an official U.S. House caucus. Congressman Randy Forbes is one of the founders and co-chair, along with Senator James Lankford from Oklahoma, a co-chair of the caucus, Congressman John Fleming from Louisiana, and Congressman Rob Whitman from Virginia. And Congressman Forbes is also from Virginia. And these men are some of our nation's strongest and most effective voices in protecting religious liberty and preserving our Judeo-Christian heritage. We are thrilled to have them on the call with us today. The Congressional Prayer Caucus has just over 90 members of Congress who are fighting proactive strategies to combat the efforts to sanitize faith from the public square and God's enduring place in our nation. They've done a number of things, too many to list here. Many of them are behind the scenes, but they have certainly introduced legislation to affirm the more than 200-year foundation of faith in America, including the overwhelming passage of reaffirming our national motto, House Resolution 13, 396 votes to 9. That's just one of many. They've rolled back efforts to remove religious references from our nation's public buildings and memorials. They're taking a stand that those who are being targeted by anti-faith activists working to protect the right to pray, protecting the conscious rights of individuals, military personnel, business owners, healthcare providers. They're spearheading specific unifying initiatives to engage the public and put forth a winsome and inspiring message. I'd like to now turn the conference over to Congressman Randy Forbes, who will open us up in prayer and say a few remarks. Congressman Forbes, do we have you on the call?
I'm here, Leah. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Leah? Welcome, Congressman Forbes. Yes, absolutely. Right. Welcome, Congressman Forbes.
Well, thank you, Leah, and if all of you would join me in prayer. Lord, we just thank you so much for the privilege of living in this great nation. We thank you for your lordship, and we thank you for the role that faith plays in finding meaning and purpose in the lives of so many Americans. We thank you for the guidance that you've given us as a nation and will continue to give us if we just continue to look to you, Lord, for our strength and our wisdom. And Father, today we just pray that you bless this call, and we pray that you continue to bless this nation. For it's in your name we pray. Amen. Leah, I want to first thank you for all of the great work that the Congressional Prayer Caucus Foundation is doing. It's an honor for me to be on the call, obviously with all of the legislators and leaders around the country, but also particularly with Senator Lankford, who is just a great stalwart in standing for faith and living for faith throughout his life and throughout his career, and also two very dear friends of mine, John Fleming and Rob Whitman, who are both leaders in so many areas in Congress, but who stand up every day for their faith. Leah, I'm going to be very brief because I want to hear these other members and I want to get to the questions and answers that you have. But all of us know the tremendous attack that faith is under in our country today. It has always been under an attack, but that attack has normally been through the culture of the marketplace of ideas. The huge shift and the huge change can be reflected in just a few quick snapshots of where the country is today. The first big change is that historically, government has always been protecting the role of faith in that marketplace of ideas. We have seen a sea change where now it is government itself that's stepping in and stopping people from exercising that faith, and that's a huge transformation from what we've seen. The second thing is that while you have people of faith in the country, and then you have people of non-faith, there is a growing group of anti-faith people. And those people are far more orchestrated, more financed than we have ever seen in our country before. And their role is not to do what they used to do, which was simply to wait and attack faith on a case-by-case basis, but it's literally to launch attacks across the country to create pain and frustration for anybody that would be connected to faith or touch faith, so that people begin to just walk away from it and begin to have this chilling effect. I hope that John Fleming and Rob Whitman will talk about their efforts with the military on this, but that's an area that we've seen tremendously. We just can take a snapshot of that again when you look at this young Coach Kennedy in Bremerton, Washington, former Marine for 20 years. And this coach is put on administrative leave, not because he molested a child, not because he was a bad coach, because his record has been exemplary for 8 years, but simply because he would dare to go on a field after a ball game and pray, thanking God for blessing his players and the other players during that game and not letting them be injured. None of us would have thought we'd have seen this kind of action in the United States of America. And so the great news for all of us, and why I'm so excited just to partner with Senator Langford and John Fleming and Rob Whitman and so many others across the country, is that we're finally rolling up our sleeves and realizing we've got to create strategies that will push back on this. And I'm excited because when we create those strategies and we execute them, we're winning across the country. And I just appreciate, Leah, all the efforts of the Congressional Prayer Caucus Foundation. Look forward to answering everybody's questions as we go through this call.
Thank you so much, Congressman. I appreciate your comments. Just a quick reminder before we invite Senator Langford to give his remarks, we will be having a question and answer session, which will follow the remarks by the presenters. And if you have a question, please email it to admin@cbcfoundation.com or text it to Jessica at 757-869-8995. And after the remarks, we'll provide the time for question and answer. Now, I would like to welcome Senator Langford. Please give your remarks, Senator Langford.
Yeah, I'm glad to be able to join you. I appreciate very much what's going on with the call and the Prayer Caucus Foundation and Representative Ford and Fleming and Whitman and all of your leadership and what's happening. Glad to be a part of this conversation. There's quite a bit happening on the religious freedom side as we all feel it and we see it. But there's some very practical examples of that. Representative Ford just brought up the issue with Coach Joe Kennedy in Bremerton, Washington. The ironic thing about that is obviously he's a former Marine that spent 20-plus years trying to protect religious liberty and freedoms around the world, and then he comes back and faces it as a coach in his own country. There were several reasons to be able to step out for Coach Kennedy, which all of us have done. We've sent letters to the district. We've spoken out on the floor of the House and the Senate on these issues. But this is an area that we need to address, and we need to address quickly. One is the district wants to identify a new standard for what is the establishment of religion, and that is if anyone can visually see you practice your faith, that they're saying that then you need to, you can't do that in any school, any public place. That is a standard no court has ever upheld, but the attorneys for Bremerton, Washington have now said that the new standard is if someone sees you that you have faith, that could be an establishment. So what the government wants to do in that case is to provide a location and a time of their choosing for the coach to be able to practice his faith. Again, that is not the role of government to be able to provide a location and time of their choosing for someone to live their faith. We have the free exercise of religion, not just freedom of worship. So it's incredibly important. So what are we doing on that? contacting with letters, doing follow-up, contacting with the coach directly, trying to find ways to be able to facilitate this, and then just to bring it to the light so that this doesn't multiply around the country. The concern is that other districts would take it on. We want to send the message clearly to other districts, no, this is inconsistent. In fact, I went to the Senate floor not long ago and talked about this specifically and then led the Senate in prayer on the floor to demonstrate that the absurdity of what the district's trying to say is that this is something that could be an establishment of religion. It's clearly not. It's an expression of this individual citizen's rights of free expression. So what else are we doing? You'll hear a lot of conversation about just the prayer on campus in the Congress as well. As every first night of votes, the House meets for a prayer time after those first votes. In the Senate, we've started prayer walks where we meet. In fact, one of those will happen this coming Monday night where staff and members of the Senate will get together and we'll actually walk through late in the evening, go to the House floor, pray for the House members sitting in those chairs. We'll go to the Senate floor, pray over the desks in the Senate. We'll walk through the facility and find multiple places to be able to pray for both the President and the Supreme Court and the old Supreme Court chambers. But those are ways that we can actually practically start to get people in Washington, D.C. engaged in prayer itself. We also did there was a trade agreement process that was set up earlier this year of how the federal government will deal with trade agreements in the days ahead. For the next 12 years, the rules for negotiating trade agreements have been set. In that, for the first time ever, we included a requirement that religious liberty be addressed when we do any trade negotiations with any country in the world. If we deal with a country like Vietnam, we certainly better bring up religious liberty and human rights issues with a country like that that's been such a serial violator. So that is now in place and will be in place for the next 12 years. We're trying to work with cases like the Hobby Lobby case out of my state, where Hobby Lobby went all the way to the Supreme Court just to protect the rights of individual businesses to be able to practice their faith in their business practices. That went all the way to the Supreme Court. We were very engaged in some of the amicus briefs for that and helping bring some of those issues to light. That's now started all over again, actually, in my state. There's seven different entities that are collected together that will go back to the Supreme Court again with dealing with issues of Obamacare and religious freedom. Four of those are universities from Oklahoma. And so we're already starting the process to be able to help them as they walk this process to actually get to the Supreme Court. All of these things happen both behind the scenes and actively as we try to find what is the best strategy to help protect and to help promote religious liberty in the United States, and what can we do to be able to keep this alive. For some strange reason in America, people are afraid of faith, and we're trying to reinforce again the uniqueness of the American value, that we shouldn't be afraid of faith. You're not required to have faith in America, but neither are you required to take your faith off to be an American. This is a place where if you have a faith, you can actually live it. And we want to reinforce that, whether it be in the public square or whether it be in the private individual choices of citizens. That is a protected right. And so the Prayer Caucus Foundation helps us to be able to get some of that word out, and I appreciate that. But there are a lot of positive things that are happening on Capitol Hill, and I do remind Christians that want to write off Washington, D.C., and I remind them we don't write off what God has not written off. And there are a lot of things that God is doing around Washington, D.C., its staff, in the members and individual people around town. And if folks will engage and pray, it will make a huge difference as it already has in our nation. So thanks for allowing me to be joining the conversation. I'm actually in a meeting in Eastern Oklahoma, so I won't be able to stay for the question and answer period at the end on the call, but I really do appreciate the chance to be a part of this call.
Thank you, Senator. We do appreciate you taking the time and appreciate everything that you are doing as part of this foundation, but as part of a senator that cares and is deeply committed to protecting our religious freedom and God's place in America. And I wanted to now go to Congressman Fleming. I'd like to just ask, I'm not sure, Congressman Fleming, are you on the call right now?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. Wonderful. So glad to have you here. So, Congressman Fleming, we'd love for you to share a few remarks as well, please.
Well, thank you. I want to thank my colleagues and thank Leah for having this conference today and all of those who are listening in and participating. What I would like to say is that in the 7 years I've been in Congress, I came in the same time as the Obama administration, we've seen a breathtaking change of the cultural and religious landscape across America, particularly coming out of the Beltway in Washington, what we have seen is a continuation of lower attendance in churches. We've seen a pushback against those who want to actively participate in religious ceremonies. We've seen, as Randy Forbes so importantly points out, that those who are non-Christians or non-religious no longer sit by passively and just show a disinterest and dismissal, but now they're actively anti-religion in many cases. And I would say that some would actually tell you today that we're in a post-modern Christianity era, and I would say that we may actually be in a pre-Christian persecution era, where Christians now have to worry about not necessarily being physically attacked, but attacked in different venues for their beliefs and their activities. And certainly we've seen plenty of evidence of this. Randy and Rob and I have worked on religious liberty issues with the military. We serve on House Armed Services Committee, and we have seen how military members, both chaplains and non-chaplains, have been persecuted and even fired and written up for such things as writing a simple essay that may talk about Christianity, having a Bible on one's desk, writing a scriptural verse on a whiteboard, many things that would be unheard of in the past, but we have successfully passed some legislation to expand those protections, and I think we have seen some response from the military, but we have to maintain our vigilance on these issues. Also, one of the bills that I have out there pending is the Abortion Non-Discrimination Act, which would, as you know, we're losing ground on our ability through Obamacare to prevent having to pay through our premium dollars and through our tax dollars for abortions. But California today requires coverage for all of their health care plans, and that's against federal law and the policy riders that we have. And what my bill would do would give a civil right of action for those who may live in California or other states that, despite their dissent, are required to use their premium dollars in health care under Obamacare to actually subsidize the taking of innocent life. So we're in many battlefronts, and churches are rapidly becoming a force in the frontier, surrounded by agnostics and, in some cases, anti-religious people. And I think a lot of this comes from our cultural decline that we're witnessing as we speak today. But I do have strong faith in God and in many of our leaders that we can turn this around, we can recover from these body blows that we've suffered over the last 7 years. And with renewal of new leadership, hopefully in Washington, that we can regain that and again, protect the First Amendment, which should protect us all in our religious liberty and our beliefs, and not only just what we believe, but the free exercise of that, whether it's speech or some sort of religious display, whether it's prayer or ceremony, that all of that should be preserved. And just to show you how strongly we feel about that, we do have church services in the very basement of the Capitol. We have them weekly for the first time in over 100 years, I believe. We have Bible studies throughout the Hill, and we encourage our colleagues and cohorts to join in that. So we're fighting back on this in a very, very forward-leaning way, but we need America to join in with us to turn this around and have revival once again. And so I want to thank you for the time I have, and I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Congressman Fleming. I appreciate your remarks and your passion for what God is doing in America. And now I'd like to invite one more, Congressman Whitman, to give his remarks. Congressman Whitman, are you on the call with us today?
Yes, I am, Leah. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Thank you, sir. Please give us your remarks.
Well, Leah, thank you so much. Thanks for all that you do with the Prayer Caucus Foundation. I want to thank the leadership of Congressman Forbes, Senator Lankford, and Congressman Fleming. They have been outstanding advocates and voices in leadership for religious freedom. And that's really, I think, what all of us need to be focused on. They have all spoken very eloquently about the issues that face us. Those are issues of others, either anti-faith individuals or agnostics or secularists that look to go after those folks of faith. And they do that to create fear and uncertainty. And they want to intimidate. They want people to hesitate about the practice of their faith. And we know how insidious that can be if we don't stand up and speak against that. And standing up and speaking against it does have an effect. Congressman Fleming spoke about what we've done on House Armed Services concerning the attacks against the chaplains within the military. And there was a chaplain within the Navy, Chaplain Wes Motter, who was advising on a private basis sailors about their faith and about what they should do in following their faith, and was essentially fired because of that. And we all pointed that out. Congressman Forbes led an effort there with the Prayer Caucus to make sure we pushed back with the Secretary of the Navy, Secretary Mazes, to say, you can't do this. This is a free practice of religion. And by doing that, you're essentially intimidating everybody else within the military that is a chaplain in making them hesitate or stop what they are doing in the profession and practice of their faith and how they work with other members of the military. The good news is that over 100,000 citizens wrote, in addition to members of Congress, to the Secretary of the Navy and said, this is wrong. You cannot fire somebody purely for the practice of their faith. And thank goodness, reason prevailed, and the chaplain Wes Motter, was reinstated. So it just goes to show that we can make a difference, and we have to stand up, because this is indeed purposeful, but it's very insidious. And if we don't, at every turn, no matter how subtle it may be, if we don't stand and say, no, we will not tolerate any effort to take away our religious freedoms, any attack on faith, any effort to create fear and uncertainty, any effort to intimidate, then we will lose. And that's not what any of us want. We all are standing here together to make sure we defend everyone's religious freedom in this country. And it's time for us to mobilize. And I want to thank, again, the foundation, the Congressional Prayer Foundation, as well as Congressman Forbes and other members of our caucus, for doing things such as the call to prayer, calling our nation back to prayer, attracting attention to make people understand their faith, understand what they can practice their faith, understand that the power of prayer is alive and well, to stimulate their, not only their thoughts and their faith, but also their actions, so that we can assure that religious freedom is not eroded in this country, because the forces out there that are attempting to do this are extraordinarily powerful. But we all know, too, that the power of faith and the power of prayer is equally, if not greater, in power as long as we mobilize it. So our efforts are to make sure that people understand what are the threats, what can we do to effectively counter those threats, what can we do to make sure that we strongly practice our faith, that at every turn we stand up against those forces that look to take away from our ability to practice our faith, and make sure that we are mobilizing in this national call to prayers and the effort to do that, making sure, too, that we also, another effort of the Prayer Caucus Foundation, is called Faith is Forward, to tell our stories of faith, to tell about how faith has positively affected people's lives, so people get involved and people understand what we can do to make sure that, you know, 100,000 voices can make a difference in the reinstatement of a Navy chaplain who was fired because of his religious faith. I mean, those are the things that we can do and can do effectively to make sure we are standing up for religious freedom. So I appreciate everyone's effort today on this call to bring this effort to people's attention, and also to ask your questions about how we can all fight this fight and make sure we stand strong for religious freedom. So, Leah, thank you again for the opportunity, and I look forward to people's questions.
Thank you, Congressman Whitman. Appreciate your remarks as well, and also your commitment. You've done so much to advance and protect religious freedom. Congressman Forbes, I wanted to invite you back again if you wanted to give any closing remarks before we open up for the question and answer time.
No, Leah, I think you just heard three wonderful men, Senator Lankford, John Fleming, Rob Whitman. The encouraging thing for our listeners to know is that we have men like this and women standing for their faith, fighting for their faith, not just in Congress, but throughout the state legislatures, local government, state governments across the country. And the key thing for us is to take all of this incredible talent and commitment and to forge from it unified strategies, because that's what it's going to take to push back on these anti-faith efforts. Remember, they are funded about nine times what faith efforts are funded. So this is a huge battle, one we've got to be together in, but I'm excited that if we are together, we can win.
Thank you, Congressman. In fact, that actually leads me to one of the first questions that was submitted, and that is regarding this coordinated and well-funded effort of this anti-God hydra of funders and coordinating organizations. Many of us have are aware of these funders and what's happening on the other side and understand it's an intentional strategy that is being put forth, and you mentioned it at the beginning of the call, an anti-faith group of minority. But the question is there any way to expose and undermine the influence of this anti-God minority that is coordinating against us and exposing and undermining their influence? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, Leah, I do. I think, first of all, each of us individually and then corporately have to step back and ask, which is going to be stronger for us? The hope we have in the light of our faith, and whether that's going to be greater than the fear we have of those who would try to extinguish it. I think that hope still springs very, very strong. And I think one of the things, if we look strategically, we have to do is to step back and realize we're fighting a different strategic battle than we were even 10 years ago, and certainly different than we were 20 years ago. 20 years ago, what you would see across the country is you would see these random pockets of attacks on faith that would normally center themselves in the courts, where you would have a left-wing judge or an activist judge that they would try to form shop, get that judge to make a ruling that they would then try to parley into something that would try to limit faith. That's no longer the case. In just the last 10, 15 years now, they have become very united in their effort, very well funded, and the effort really consists of three major attacks. One of them is to try to get God removed from every place they can. If they can take references to God, whether it's in God We Trust, whether it's in the Ten Commandments, whatever, off of our walls where our young people and other citizens don't see it, they've had a major victory on faith. The other thing that they are trying to do today, which is hugely different, is to create enormous pain for people of faith. So we'll see one or two of these organizations trying to, in a shotgun fashion, create all the pain they can do. So if it's an organization, they're trying to file Freedom of Information Act. If it's a young guy like the coach that you heard referenced in Bremerton, they're going to try things to get him fired. If it's someone in the military, John Fleming and Rob Whitman can talk about how that impacts their career. But it makes it so that people step back and say, oh, my gosh, I don't want to talk about my faith, too much pain there. And then the third thing is this myth that they've been able to create about what the separation of church and state is. And church and state separation was at its nexus, at its beginning, was simply the state wouldn't tell the church what to do. The church couldn't tell the state what to do. They've turned that on the head now to say if anybody in government, whether you're an elected leader or just an employee, dares to even express your faith so that someone else can see it, that's a violation of church and state. And if you're a pastor and in the pulpit and you see the huge impact government's having on faith and you dare say anything, then that's a violation of church and state. So, Leah, just three quick action items that we can all unite together on. The first one is there is a common ground that we can do, which is putting a God we trust back up on our walls. It's a safe harbor. They can't attack us for it. You can get it back up on the walls. We need to be getting it up on walls and everywhere. So as fast as they're trying to tear it down, we're getting in God we trust in classrooms and office buildings and other places all across the country. We've got it up in over 100 members of Congress right now, including the Speaker's office, the former Speaker's office, Majority Leader's office, and the Minority Leader's office. The second thing we have to do is push back when they try to cause pain to these individuals. So you heard what Rob and John talked about in terms of this chaplain. But the other thing we need to realize, right now we've got this young coach who feels very much like he's standing alone. They come after him. You know, I personally talked to him, even his head coach, other people out there who are people of faith. They want to walk away because they don't want to bear the pain. We ought to be not just having members of Congress and state legislators writing letters. What if churches that come together and jointly write letters to this Bremerton school district, making sure they realize that across the country, people aren't going to stand for this. They're not going quietly into the night. And then the third and final thing, Leah, is on separation of church and state. You can preach it all day long, but unless we start showing it, that myth will continue. So one of the things I encourage our pastors to do, invite elected officials into your pulpit. You know, we can create the prototypes for them. If you don't want to give them the whole service to actually talk, let them do like Rob Whitman has done across Virginia, which is to go into a church, read the call to prayer and proclamation, and you just watch the members of your church. They'll line up for the longest period of time signing that proclamation. But the more people start seeing people of faith standing up and elected officials standing up, they realize this thing is a myth, and we don't have to go quietly into the night. So they're the three suggestions I had, Leah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Congressman. Those are excellent. In fact, we actually had a question come in from a pastor that said, what are some ongoing initiatives that could help people of faith? And that sort of leads into the next question as well that we had from Larry Denver, the president of Faith and Freedom Coalition in Pennsylvania. And he was talking about something that actually this question has come up three or four times. It's common. Is the majority of the pastors, ministers, faith leaders really working in an atmosphere of fear and ignorance, the amount of disinformation. You talked about it, this separation of church and state that is paralyzing, the lie that they believe. How can we produce a strategy that can reach these leaders and create a spark of courage for these pastors and faith leaders that have so much influence in the church?
Leah, why don't we see if Rob or Congressman Fleming would like to respond to that one?
Go ahead, John.
Well, I was just going to make a quick comment, Rob, and that is that one thing that we have seen that has evaporated from the scene is the way churches maybe 20 years ago came together and organized and were high profile in their defense of religious liberty and our values, and that's all but really evaporated today. We just don't see it. And when I talk with pastors, I really get a sense that they feel that they have all they can handle with just what's within the four walls of their church. But, you know, I certainly warn them that what is happening on the national scene will affect them locally, and they need to be fully equipped and organized and interlocked with people of like faith in order to battle against it.
John, I think that's a good point. I just want to add one additional piece, and that is what I believe we've seen with pastors is a little bit of uncertainty creep in about truly what does separation of church and state mean. And it's not existent, but they believe that it is, and they've been led to believe that just by what they've heard around them. And because of that, and the uncertainty in their mind, you know, they are hesitant to speak out. What we've got to do is to make sure we get them the information clearly about what the law says, what our Constitution says, and that there is indeed not a separation of church and state. There's nothing there that the government does in any way, shape, or form to stop them from clearly professing their faith, and to understand, too, that there are protections for them when they are willing to do that, and even if somebody goes after them in a legal sense, that there are forces out there that will work to protect them and defend them in that situation. I think a lot of pastors, too, look at it and say, look, I just want to avoid litigation. I don't even want to have the threat of it, so therefore I'm just not going to go there. So, again, it's that whole realm of fear, uncertainty, and intimidation that those anti-forces look to put forward, and it becomes effective. Even if they don't stop people, they create enough uncertainty there to slow them down, and that hurts too.
Thank you.
Leah, just one other point on that with what John said. For those people around the country who do not believe this is coming to a theater near them, let me just tell you, it's coming, and it's coming rapidly. And the key thing is, and I'll just tell you on these three men who've spoken here, but I could multiply that times 20 by the people that are in Congress that I see doing it. Every time they take one of these stands, they get our arrows shot at them, and they get them attacked, not because they're wrong, just because of their faith. And yet sometimes they feel, and I know our state legislators feel, and our local council people feel, and our school board people feel, they're standing all alone. Imagine yourself, as Senator Lankford said, you're a young coach. You spent 20 years in the Marine Corps fighting so people abroad could have freedom of religion. You walk on a football field after the game is over, not even carrying students out there with you, and you simply pray, and you have the school district tell you that you can believe what you want as long as you do it in a closet where nobody can see it, and yet then find who is going to circle that coach. And one of the things that is vitally important for us now is when we see these attacks around the country, the media isn't going to talk about them because they don't want that attention there. We need to circle the wagons and protect these pastors that are under attack, protect these legislators and policymakers that are under attack, protect these employees that are under attack. But, again, the biggest thing we can do in our pulpit is not just talk about it, but show the picture. Have an elected official come in. We have videos they can show. They don't even have to preach. You can look at the videos beforehand and then do the call to prayer, but watch how it starts penetrating as we do it all across the country instead of waiting and playing defense, which is what we have been doing for the last decade or so.
Yes, thank you, Congressman. And just to follow up for those that are wondering specifically what Congressman Forbes is referring to, the Pray USA, if you go to PrayUSA.com, this was a prayer initiative spearheaded by our government leaders when they came together and put together one of the several things they committed to, but this was one of the most important, they said, and that was that they would go into the pulpits, not just sign the proclamation. We have nearly 900 government leaders who have signed the proclamation, nearly 140,000 individuals, about 50 organizations who are part of this, encouraging this across the nation. But they said we cannot just do it by proclamation. We must do it by demonstration. And that is why they're going into the churches. Churches and pastors and government leaders standing side by side in the pulpit. And this is breaking the back of the lie of separation of church and state, because people are seeing it and going, wow, I didn't realize they could do this here in the church, and we can do it out there. And that gives everybody an opportunity to speak about what's happening across this nation. So thank you. Members of Congress, I know all of you were a part of initiating and spearheading this Pray USA movement, and you can find out more at PrayUSA.com. Please join these leaders who are doing it. It's very powerful everywhere they go. Shift gears. There's several more questions here that I'd like to read. One of them is shifting gears to the judicial branch. Many of us believe, this question is, that the overreach of the judicial branch at both the federal and local level is wreaking havoc on constitutionally protected religious freedom. Do you recommend a strategy for combating the judicial overreach that is a trend that has started recently?
John, do you or Rob want to take that one? Or? Well, Leah, I'll jump in. One of the things that I think that it's imperative that we look at is what our strategy has been in the past, and it's been a default. And here's basically what it's been. When you look at people of faith and they think about government, they think about the President of the United States and the Vice President of the United States and maybe the leadership on both sides of the aisle in Congress and maybe the Supreme Court. When the anti-faith people look at these attacks, they look at every member of Congress. They look at their staff. They look at every agency. They look at every court across the country so that they can forum shop and pick the ones that are best for them. And then what they do is they will pick several of these courts where they think they may move a judge or they may move an agency, and they'll focus their energy on that. And what historically we've been doing as people of faith is you wait until that happens, and then you have to muster all of your resources to try to defend against that particular case or agency decision or executive action, whatever it might be. The difficulty is, remember, they've already picked the forum they thought was best for them, and they have got literally 9 times more resources than we do. So what our strategy is to flip that around. And that's why it's so important we have all these state prayer caucuses that we do it on local levels. In fact, we even have some city councils now that have prayer caucuses, because by uniting and pushing these across the country, we can do the same thing. We can fight all these agencies. We can fight all of these court decisions, and we can spread their resources out and make them fight around the country. We shouldn't continue just to wait until the attacks come home to us and try to defend against that one attack.
Thank you, Congressman. Would either of you, Congressman Fleming or Whitman, like to add anything to that?
Well, Fleming here, and I have very little to add to what Randy said, because he's so on point with it. But I think people have to understand that there is really a cynical political view that's prevailing out there and growing. We see this in the political correctness movement that we're seeing, that I predict will spread across college campuses across the country from what happened at the University of Missouri. And it's a very dangerous thing, because they talk in terms of things we've never heard of, founding fathers, concepts that we've never known about, such as a safe space, which means that somehow we have to protect people from even viewing something that could be possibly offensive to them. And you know that the first thing always on that list is going to be any type of religious expression, particularly Christianity. I would just challenge Christians today that you can't just stay within the boundaries of your religious beliefs, because we've seen it happen in other cultures and other nations, that these things start slowly. The erosion begins very gradually at first, so slowly that you barely notice it. But once it picks up steam, attacks on what you publish, what you say in public, even showing up to the church of your choice, if not through social pressure, through other means, could be in jeopardy in the future. And so now's the time to act. We can't wait. And we must be organized, as Randy, of course, has so well pointed out.
Leah, thanks. I think that both John and Randy have covered it well, but I think it begs to all of us, as we see these things happening around us, that we cannot be complacent. We see the efforts that have taken place, and believe me, they are organized, they are purposeful, and they are directed, and there is an objective that they all have. And if we don't gather the forces of good against these anti-faith forces, we see where things will end up. John pointed it out well. We see what's happening on college campuses today, and that's the precursor of expanding this to our religious liberties and freedom. So we must be vigilant, and we must be outspoken in pushing back against these forces.
Excellent. Thank you. shifting gears again, I have a few more. One of the submissions was that religious liberty is now deliberately being associated with anti-homosexual in the public narrative, among other things, but this is the most recent. We all now understand that the goal is simply to allow for those with different beliefs to live their faith in the public square, but the other side has worked overtime to misinterpret intentions. Do you have any thoughts on how we can overcome this this narrative that is being put out that religious freedom is now being redefined as being hateful and discriminating and anti-homosexual or whatever else they put in there?
Leah, oftentimes when you go back through the scriptures, they give you some pretty good insight. I think if you listen to what John and Rob both just said, the first thing is we need to take the warning in Isaiah pretty close to heart, which is what we're seeing in our country today is a flip to call what is good evil and what's evil good. And then if you say, how do we combat that? You know, Christ gave us a pretty good example when he talked about the wheat and tares. If we try to play defense on all of these situations, we probably lose. And Rob mentioned the Face It Forward concept that we have in the prayer caucus in Congress, which is to start telling stories about what people of faith actually do to make a difference in their communities. They're stories that never get told. The newspapers don't tell them. The media don't tell them. Unfortunately, in our churches, we don't tell them today. We've got people all across America who are doing things for adoption, people who are doing things to feed the poor, doing things in health care, doing all kinds of things in entertainment, sports, whatever, that's making a huge difference because of their faith. And there's stories that we have got to start telling and to tell them in a widespread manner so people begin to realize that that is what faith is all about, as we all know. The other thing, just to remember again what Rob and John both said, these orchestrated efforts on college campuses and against law enforcement and other things, just no one on the phone thinks these are spontaneous, that they just happen. They're well-funded, oftentimes orchestrated, and as John said, when you watch it on one college campus, you better believe they're planning to do it in other places, and they're not going to just control your faith. They're going to control ideas about property rights, about other kinds of freedoms, about capitalism, all of those kinds of things. That's why this battle is so important.
Randy, I think you bring up a great point about how this is indeed an organized, orchestrated effort. And remember, the effort here is to personally attack or demonize individuals of faith. And when they do that, and they can paint you in that light, it advances their cause for their beliefs in the sanctity of marriage, in what is moral. And what they want to do is they want to push the nation's barometer in their direction. And what they count on is by being that aggressive is that people of faith will not speak out. And when that happens, they win. And remember, this is very insidious. They do it a little bit at a time. It's very incremental. It's kind of the death by a thousand cuts. And then years down the road, if we're not careful, we'll look back and go, you know, you remember when this started. And it seemed to be isolated. But then, as Andy said, we see it building to an organized effort. And then one day you ask, boy, how in the world did we get here? And if we had just spoken out early on and stood against this, we'd have been able to at least stem the tide of what's happening with this current effort, to demonize and personally attack individuals of faith and their faith itself. And then they create the mindset in others and the intimidation and the fear and uncertainty in people of faith. And when they do that, they win.
I agree with both my good friends, Rob and Randy, on all those things. And I would just add that we shouldn't accept in any way this false narrative as that somehow fighting for religious liberty is being anti-anything and connecting it with homosexuality is, again, just another false narrative. We're not entertaining any type of legislation that would limit what someone does in the bedroom or anything, although we're constantly accused of that. What we are for is the long-held traditions of marriage that have held, has been the single-unit fiber of our culture for thousands of years. It's guaranteed that our culture and our civilization has thrived along with Christianity itself, and that's the sort of thing that we want to protect along with life itself. And so to accept that somehow we are attacking or we're against our brothers and sisters who may be homosexual or something like that is really just a false narrative and a way to really take apart the long-held Christian traditions that we hold so dear.
And Leah, it is important, though, that the people in this call and other faith leaders around the country realize oftentimes we all run in our own lanes. I don't know whether it was Senator Lankford or Congressman Fleming, but they talked about how our pastors are so overburdened with just the challenges of their own churches sometimes that that's where their focus is. And we don't want to make a poster child out of Coach Kennedy in Washington, but when you see them turn on somebody like that, and here's the way it works, whether it's on a college campus or a locality, when the balloon goes up, they all know that's like the default position, launch the attacks, and they launch them from everywhere. But the problem is if a single person on this telephone call gets those same kind of attacks, you're going to hear crickets out there from people of faith coming to your rescue and supporting you. That's why when we see these things happen as people of faith, we need to be minimally, sending out emails, writing letters, but we also need to get our churches organized and have the people in the church sign letters to these school districts and say, you can't do this. And if we start making that same kind of response, then the public is going to say, well, wait a minute, this is, maybe there are kind of two positions here. And in the marketplace of ideas, faith will win because truth is going to win in the marketplace of ideas.
Thank you, Congressman. Excellent point. And we are coming to the end of our time, and I have two more that I just want to wrap up with. And what would you say to legislators, ministry leaders, pastors that are weary? That leads right into this question. I know that there are some key people out there that are doing just what you're saying, and they're getting exhausted. They're not seeing much fruit yet. What can you say to those that are on the front lines right now, both legislators and ministry leaders, pastors that are in the battle?
Rob, start that.
Yeah, John Fleming here. One thing that I've noticed is that over the years, many of our missions as Christians in our Christian churches have been turned over to the federal government, taking care of families who are down and out, those of us in our communities who have needs. It seems that there's just a new federal program almost every year to take care of various needs. And the downside of all of that is that in many ways churches lose their missionary relevance in that. And I think that's something we have to regain. We have to understand that for many people, government has replaced religion and God in their lives. And I think that's a huge problem, which is creating this movement towards secularism in our nation. And I think that's a very dangerous road to go down. So having said that, I think it's something that we have to do in Washington to work towards limited government and to begin to turn over some of these missions back to our churches, because that goes back to the very days of Jesus Christ. In his ministry is ministering to those around him and in need. And, we don't have a specific program to do that, but I think we as legislators should work from Washington to do that, but also in the communities. You need to work to fill that void that definitely exists.
Well, John, I agree. Just to add to that, this is indeed a community-based effort by our churches. And that's the way that we can entertain and capture the hearts and minds of individuals. In the absence of that, people will look for what will serve their needs. And many times folks say, well, the only way that your needs can be served is through government. And we understand that that's not what's in the best interest of individuals. In fact, their liberties and freedoms are what are paramount, and that's preserved by making sure that it is our faith community that reaches out to people, assures them that they have their neighbors that are there to help them, not a replacement in the form of a government or a government program that's there. And that's the role that churches have played traditionally throughout the history of this nation. If you look at the strength and fabric of community, it's been with people of faith. It's been the churches. They determine where are the families in need, how can we most help, how do we reach out and do the things that we need to do. In that absence, people look for a substitute. And the substitute has been provided by many people that believe government should be the substitute. And that we know is not what our founding fathers had in mind. It's not the foundation of this nation. And it's extraordinarily important that all of us in the faith community understand our obligation to reach out and to meet the community's needs as people faith.
And Leah, I just give you my last thoughts. John Fleming and Rob Whitman are both dear friends of mine, but we also share a bond. We all serve on the Armed Services Committee, so we oftentimes don't use sports analogies. We have to go back to military history, military examples. When Pearl Harbor was attacked, of course, we had huge devastation there, and one of the aircraft carriers that was hit very, very bad was the USS Yorktown. Yorktown was just really hit bad, a lot of casualties to that ship. And they thought it would take 6+ months to get it back underway. Admiral Nimitz went on that ship, inspected it. It was in terrible shape. Looked to the workers then, and he said, I've got to have this ship in 3 days. Workers came from everywhere, pipe fitters, electricians, you know, anybody that imagined. They worked in horrible conditions. But in just over 2 days, the Yorktown was sailing out of Pearl Harbor. Now, all those workers, all they could see was insulation hanging down. All the pipes weren't exactly right. The electrical stuff wasn't perfect. If you looked at any of them, they might have been a little demoralized. They were exhausted. They were tired. They had just taken a huge hit at Pearl Harbor. But this ship was sailing. That ship ended up at Midway. That aircraft carrier, if we hadn't have had it at Midway, Midway would have come out different. Midway ended up being the battle that turned around the whole war in the Pacific because those workers did their jobs, got that carrier underway. I don't know the stands that John Fleming takes today, whether I can always see the direct benefit or that Rob takes or Senator Lankford or all of our pastors or our legislators around the country, but I know this. If our faith is what we believe it to be, then we absolutely know that it's true and that in the end we win. We just need to keep our eyes on the Lord and make sure we're doing what he wants us to do. I'm confident in the end this comes out in a very, very good way for those of us who will stand the course.
Thank you so much, all three of you gentlemen, for the remarks, for your passion, for all that you bring to the table, for all that you're doing. As many of you know, the Congressional Prayer Caucus and the Congressional Prayer Caucus Foundation are fighting for religious freedom and to protect our Judeo-Christian heritage. We believe that it's crucial, what I heard, just as a recap on this call, it was absolutely crucial that we unite together, that we are not afraid to speak out, that we go on the offense, that we do not wait to play defense, that we stand with the victims across the nation who are being targeted intentionally and ensure that they do not stand alone, that if you would feel so led that you would be involved with Pray USA, you can go to PrayUSA.com and be a part of the churches, have the opportunity to stand together, pastors and legislators together in their pulpits. Also, put God back up in our nation. Do not let them rip down God off of every monument and conversation, but ensure that we put God back up in this nation. And we are so grateful. We're seeing just great things from you. We know that it's, you know, a lot of us are doing this. A lot of us are fighting for these freedoms. We're passionate about this. We care. If you think that we're on the wrong track or that we need to go to different directions, will you contact us? Tell us what you suggest. If you think we're on the right track, would you join these government leaders and what they're doing, what they're trying to put forth through the initiatives and through their efforts, not just the members of Congress, but literally state legislators, council members all across this nation, government leaders are standing for these things. And thirdly, will you pray? Pray without ceasing. Pray for the leaders as they seek direction. Pray for our country. We need prayer. And before we go to close in prayer, Congressman Hootman is going to close us in prayer. Do any of you have any further closing remarks that you'd like to put forward?
Well, Fleming here, I would just like to say I want to thank my colleagues who are on the call today and who serve on the prayer caucus. But I want to especially thank Randy Forbes for his leadership and leading the prayer caucus and the prayer caucus foundation and many other things that I think are very cutting edge and innovative. So I wanted to especially recognize Randy for all he's doing in his role in leadership.
And Lee, I'd like to also thank Randy for his leadership. He's done an extraordinary job. He's very visionary in the things that we need to do to make sure we stand affirmed in our faith and make sure that we are fighting against these forces out there, these anti-faith forces that we know are around us and continue to increase every day. And I want to thank John for his leadership in that effort, too. And Leah, especially thank you for what you do with our foundation, because you are out there on the front lines every day, too, engaging people and making sure that we can do everything possible in this effort to assure our faith and our religious freedom.
Well, thank you all very much. I want to add my gratitude, too. It's a pleasure and a privilege not only to be in this battle with these members of Congress and the state legislators across the nation, but with every one of you that's on this call. You're on this call because you care and you're deeply committed, and many of you in your organizations are fighting and working and praying and doing everything you can. And the reason we believe that there is still hope in this nation is because God has stirred the hearts of men and women that, like every one of us that is on this call. So thank you, Congressman, Senators. Thank you, leaders across this nation. And with that, Congressman Whitman, would you close us in prayer?
Yes, thank you, Leah. Most gracious Heavenly Father, our God, our Creator, it is from your hand that we have received our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Lord, you have called upon us as your people, and you've given us the right and the duty to worship you, the one and only God, and also your Son, Jesus Christ. Lord, it's through the power and working of your Holy Spirit that you call us to live out our faith in the midst of a world fraught with evil, fraught with many challenges. And you direct us to bring the light and the saving truth of your gospel to every corner of our society. Lord, we ask you to bless us in our vigilance for the gift of religious liberty that you bestow upon us. Lord, give us the strength of mind and our heart to readily defend our freedoms when they're threatened. Lord, give us the courage and making our voices heard on the behalf of the rights of your entire church. And Lord, thank you for the freedom of conscience of all people of faith. Lord, grant us, and we pray in your holy name, that we have a clear and united voice, that all of our sons and daughters gathered in your church in this decisive hour in the history of our nation, give us the strength, the courage, and conviction to do your will, so that with you, every trial is withstood, every danger overcome. And Lord, for the sake of our children and our grandchildren and all who come after us, assure that this great land will always be one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Lord, we ask this through your gracious and holy name. Amen.
Amen. Amen. And thank you all for being a part of this call today. And this concludes today's call. We'll have be doing these quarterly. You'll be getting an invitation for another call soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Leah.